Coming up on Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway, I talk with Broadway producer Tom Curtihy. Peter and Michael join me to talk with Leslie Kritzer and Catherine Cox about the release of the cast recording of The Memory Show. Michael gives us his review of Larry David's new show, Fish in the Dark. Peter reviews Women Project Theater's production of Bright Half Life. All that plus our trivia challenge. Please stay tuned. States,
and I tried to be nice. But honestly, who gives a shit? Sit around, pick their noses, and get fat. He's pretty fat. Who's the president of the United States? What kind of question is that? Why does it take the doctor an hour to look at you for 2 minutes? If I was in charge, let me tell you, I'd make a...
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway for Sunday, March 8th, 2015. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this morning, we have Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books, his most recent being The Great Parade, which will be released on April 7th and available everywhere. His columns appear at MTI, Critzerland, Masterworks Broadway, and many other places. Michael Portantier is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, The Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a photographer whose work can be seen at followspotphoto.com as well as many other places on the internet. With us today, we have a very special guest. Tom Curtihy, who is a Broadway producer, is joining us. And we know Tom from way back on the Broadway production of Deuce and the revival of Ragtime, Masterclass, After Midnight, Mothers and Sons, It's Only a Play, and the upcoming The Visit. Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here.
So tell us, how did you, what was your path into producing on Broadway?
Well, James, you and I went to the same high school where we had a great teacher who probably fed our love of the theater. I went to NYU where I studied politics. I had two passions, politics and the theater. I was a dramatic literature major, and then I went to NYU Law School, where I thought that I would be an entertainment lawyer, and specifically in the world of theater. I graduated in 1988, and at the time, AIDS was decimating the gay community. I'm a gay man, and I was fortunate that I was healthy. And so my career took a different path. Rather than pursuing a career in theater and the law, I worked providing free legal services to people with HIV and AIDS for almost 20 years. So my whole life changed. And at some point in time, after doing it for almost 2 decades, the passion for the theater never waned at all. It remained such an essential part of my life. And I started doing more on the pro bono side with theater. I produced an afternoon of theater, a conversation about the theater at Guild Hall in East Hampton. It was called Theater from a Gay Perspective. And Terrence McNally, Edward Albee, and Lanford Wilson were on the panel. I introduced it. Terrence and I met in the green room. We fell in love. And so I spent more time around people in the theater than I had for a long time. I was determined that I was not going to become the spouse of a playwright, that I was going to continue to have my own career, and did. I continued to practice law. But the more time I spent around theater professionals, the more it stirred my original, the passions in my original dream, which were to be involved in the theater. And it made more sense at that point in my life to produce than it did to be a theater lawyer. And so one step at a time, I asked a number of producers in New York if I could bring them coffee or lick envelopes or do anything just to learn the craft. And so I had some people who were very generous to me, a woman named Susie Dietz, Matty Eisenberg, Kevin McCollum, Scott Rudin, they all kindly let me watch them do their thing. And spent a couple of years doing that, and then hung up my own shingle, as it were. So, I've been producing theater full time, I guess, for 6 or 7 years. I absolutely love it. It's unleashed all of these youthful passions in me, which is nice. At 51, I feel resurrected, and it's great.
I didn't realize, going back to the very beginning of your story, Norm Goldman was your teacher as well.
Yes, we share Norm, Mr. Golden.
Mr. Golden, exactly. It's very hard for when Norm. When I see him, I'm always calling him Mr. Golden, and he always gives me this smack. He's like, Norm.
he's cracked my knuckles enough that now I do call him Norm. But he was really a great teacher. And you and I, prior to this interview, were saying he produced some really ambitious productions at our high school.
Yeah.
And I think one of the great things about him was that he didn't dumb it down and he didn't patronize his students. And so what we did was really a great, the opportunities we were afforded were such a great blessing. And look, for you and I, it was a short trip on the Long Island Railroad into the city where we could go to Broadway and see these great shows. And clearly, I graduated in 81. I think you're 85.
Yeah.
Well, you graduated in 85. So 30 years later, 35 years later, we're both doing the same thing. And I think it's interesting that this is the first year the Tony Awards will give a special award to a great teacher. So there are submissions coming in from all over the country for teachers. And I think that's really, I think that this phone call and that, or this interview and the conversation we're having is evidence of the importance of great teachers.
So going forward into all the different parts of your exploration onto Broadway, you mentioned that you were thinking about becoming a theatrical lawyer and a new Mark Sendroff, as it were, lawyer to Broadway. And then it took you where you started producing and working for producers in general, and that's typically a lot of people ask, you know, how do I become a producer? And I think that is a very typical way, is to make yourself useful at a producer's office. And so how do you sort of pay it forward? Do you have an internship program that you're working on and bringing people along on It's Only a Play and The Visit and other stuff?
As a matter of fact, yes. We have an intern in our office. I have three young theater professionals working with me. We're bringing on another intern. I'm involved with the Commercial Theater Institute, so I'll be speaking at their seminars. I did their 3-day intensive when I was starting out, and that really sealed the deal for me. So I think that it just made me know that this was something I wanted to do, and I met dozens of other like-minded people at the same place in their careers, which was at the very beginning of their producing careers, and became friends with quite a few of them. We're still a cadre of people that get together and talk and brainstorm and strategize, and it's fun to see them around town at Joe Allen or at openings, to know that this weekend we gave up together years ago, where we were in sort of a producing boot camp, has led to this place where we see our names in playbills and on marquees, and it's and we all like to think that we're bringing great works of art into the world, works that will be done all over the country and the world. And So yes, I do. It's my ethos to give back. It's in my DNA. And so I do that both publicly and privately with the internships that we have in my office.
The CTI, or Commercial Theater Institute, is just growing in leaps and bounds. I mean, it's been around seemingly in my memory forever, but in the last 10 years or so, it seems as though it has become much more of a mainstream. And you go to these, the 3-day weekend intensive, and then they also have is it a 13-week or 16-week type of program?
It's funny. It's somewhere between 12 and 16 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly, it's an extended program.
Yeah, but then you have, you go to the 3-day weekend intensive, and you see, 400, 500, 600 people who have all shelled out a good sizable amount of money to come to this thing, and you say theater is not dead. It's wonderful to see these people investing in themselves and their time and money for that. You mentioned before that your passions were both theater and politics, which brings us to our next topic, which is there was an article in Playbill about a week or so ago about tax incentives not afforded to Broadway investors. And that when I read that article, I said, I got to get Tom on the program to explain a little bit about this. So why don't you tell us about it?
Sure. So if an individual invests in a film that is capitalized at $15 million or less, or a film or a television show, that individual can write off that investment in the first year, even if there are future profits on it, and then it's taxed differently. For the theater, someone who invests in a show that's under $15 million cannot write off that investment in the first year. And in fact, as they're being paid back on the investment, and there's no profit, they are being taxed on the income that's coming back to them just to restore them to a zero balance. So there's a disparity. It's rather complicated and arcane, but the fundamental fact is that people who invest in film and television are given incentives that people who invest in theater are not. And I really believe it's a mistake of history. I don't think that this was by design. I think that almost every legislator you speak to about this understands that there is no rational reason for it. It's probably because the film and television lobby was stronger than the theater lobby was at the time that this was put into the tax code. But now we have a very strong Broadway League and the American Theater Wing, and we've realized that when we reach out to people who have a prior history of investing in film and television, and we say, have a great show, invest in my show, and then they learn about how they'll be treated for tax purposes, how their investment will be treated, that they can't write it off in the first year of their investment. It's a disincentive. There's a real disconnect for people who have that hit, who would otherwise be inclined to invest in theater, but are not given the incentive that they are when they look to film and television for their investments. And that it's fundamentally unfair. There's live theater. This is not just for Broadway, by the way. We're talking about live theater across the country, uh-huh. Across the globe. So it's as Paul Libin from the Drew Jensen Organization always says, Broadway is the longest street in America. The Broadway brand is a national brand, and there are shows in all 50 states. I think every member of Congress really understands this, but when you talk about the tax code, it frightens people. And I think that over the last 2 to 3 years, we as the Broadway League have been doing the necessary educating to put legislators at ease and explain that this is not going to be a drain on the economy. In fact, this provides an incentive for people. It incentivizes investors to put money in theater and help local communities. And I think that the Congress will be ready to take the leap. I believe that the president would sign something under the right procedural circumstances. But right now, our goal is to bring parity where there is none.
It's so hard because it seems like there's so many other things on Congress's and the president's plate to focus on a tax incentive for Broadway. But I can understand why this would really benefit Broadway and the theaters around the country. So hopefully it could get done. So what's happening with it? Is there anything that our listeners can do to help out?
Well, that's a great question. On April 15th, the league is organizing a lobby day. So if people are interested in going to Washington, D.C. on April 15th, they can contact the Broadway League. After the 15th, we'll be doing a major education campaign and we'll encourage people to write letters, make phone calls. But in the meantime, if you can call your local congressional representative and just say, what gives? I love the theater. I don't understand why it's treated as a second-class citizen to film and television. There's no rational reason. I mean, it really is about parity.
So, Tom, some people, you know, some people drink and some people do drugs and some people do have all sorts of other vices in life. I buy domains. I buy a lot of domains. And one of the domains that I have is BroadwayVotes.com. And so maybe we could set up something to get the information out on BroadwayVotes.com. And
let's do that. I mean, that's that. I've not heard of that addiction. I'm sure there's a 12-step group for you.
You know, I'm almost thinking about getting to step one, but I have, you know, my wife says I have way too many domains.
Okay, I'm a domainaholic. My name's James, and I'm a domainaholic.
Exactly.
I think, let's have that conversation. I think that's really important.
Yeah,
We really need to get the word out.
I know that you have to run, but any word about that we should know about the visit before you run off?
Well, I'll
April 23rd, it's going to open at the Lyceum.
We open on April 23rd. If you love Broadway, if you love the American Musical Theater, it's a show you don't want to miss. It is extraordinarily entertaining. It's Candor and Ebb's final musical. Terrence McNally wrote the book. Perhaps most significantly, Che Rivera is giving a career-topping performance. It is the stuff of history and of legend, and you will be moved, you will laugh, it will tug at your heart, it will make you think, but most of all, you will think, thank God for Che Rivera. I mean, she is giving a performance that people will talk about for years and years and years to come. It is extraordinary, and I am so proud to have my name on it. It's really a work of art.
She's a national treasure, and while people are going to talk about it for years and years, people have been talking about the visit coming to Broadway for years and years and years, and you made it happen, so I thank you for that.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I need to give a shout-out to Roger Reese, who just raised the level of Cheetah's game. Roger is sensational. John Doyle, our director, Graziella Danielle. But I am very proud. I have believed in this project for years, and its time has come. And everything in its time, and we're ready. Broadway's ready, the world's ready, and so am I. April 23rd.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us on Broadway Radio and telling us about your career and the tax incentives for Broadway investors that we hope to get Congress to pass.
Wonderful talking to you.
Thanks.
Things I brought with me to my mother's house. 10 t-shirts, 6 sweaters, 4 pairs of shoes. one boot, a new toothbrush with the wrong kind of bristles, contact lens solution, twin-size sheets, an impending sense of doom. I put out a personal ad last week. It read, single Jewish female seeks man, preferably non-smoker, doesn't have to be a joker, because if anyone can make jokes, I can. They say that funny people are the saddest kind, and God knows I've had enough of that. No dogs, but okay if you have a cat. Meow. Single Jewish female seeks man.
With us this morning, we have two very special guests. Catherine Cox and Leslie Kritzer are here with us, and we're talking about a new CD release coming up on the 10th of March called The Memory Show, which you both did down at the Transport Group in 2013. So good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
So let's start with Catherine. You know, The Memory Show, you guys are releasing it, you know, more or less 2 years after you did it at the Duke on 42nd Street. You know, what's it been like? Has it changed for you?
You have the, I was going to say, I don't remember The Memory Show.
Catherine!
So it's been 2 years. It just seems like yesterday.
That's insane. Wait, did we start it? How long ago did we start
it? We went to the Barrington stage. We did it as a reading, the two of us. And then we did it as a some kind of, well, we memorized it, which, you know.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. The Memory Show, to memorize it. That's pretty incredible. And then we did it here in New York. So
yeah. For our listeners who haven't seen The Memory Show, why don't you give us a quick synopsis of the plot for them?
Take it away.
Catherine, I love you. I missed you. The Memory Show is about a mother and daughter. We are called mother and daughter. Basically, the daughter, who is in her early 30s, moves home to be with the mother who has some early onset of Alzheimer's. Is that how you say it correctly?
Yes.
And they have a tumultuous relationship. The father has passed away a couple years before, at least. I'm forgetting. But the daughter is very close with the father, never been close with the mother. And
Ira.
Ira, that's right. And this is basically the show is about the their relationship, and basically as the mother's health declines slowly, which I think is the most beautiful part about the show. They actually get not unbeknownst to them, but slowly they get closer. And as the mother's health declines, and it gets even harder to live with her, she finds out things about her past that she didn't know. And it's just a beautiful story about love and relationships and family. And, you know, you really never know the whole story behind your parents sometimes, and what happens when your kids, you know, on a personal note, like even with my parents' divorce, you know, 10 years ago, I had certain feelings about it that I don't have the same viewpoint that I do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, before then, when they actually did get divorced when I was 13, that there's, you know, they're just people doing the best they can. And I really, with Memory Show, it's just such a beautiful story in the sense that, like, you know, mothers and daughters, you have a difficult relationship with your mom, coming to some understanding of her. It was a very beautiful and difficult show to do. I think for both of us, I'll speak for you too, Catherine. I think emotionally, vocally, physically, it was a lot. And, it's just a very special piece. And the album, I'll just say really quickly, is really awesome.
Well,
it's really awesome.
It has a great idea for an opening song, Who's the President of the United States? It's a very smart idea, because we know immediately what that means, because that's the question everybody's asked when to prove that you still have your faculties. So that I thought was a great idea. It got me right into the story when I saw the show a few years ago. So I knew I was dealing with quality writers just from their knowing enough to start the show with that song.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that it's early onset.
Yes.
You know, it's early onset. So the fact that I'm physically fine. I have a cantankerous lady who's somehow made it all along. My daughter decides to move in to take care of me. I mean, it's kind of like, what? Are you kidding me? You can't take care of yourself.
Right. I was wondering if... I know it's not exactly the same story, but I was wondering if either of you have seen Still Alice.
Yeah. I have not yet.
I have not. Oh, Leslie, a date.
No, we should, because I honestly didn't want to watch it yet.
Together.
I knew it was going to ruin me.
Mm. Well, I never wanted to go to see it just because I just didn't want to get into it. But if I went with you, I could hold your hand and we would go see it together. That would be great.
I would do it. I would do that in a second, because I don't fancy sitting in my house by myself. Well, my husband doesn't want to see it, but I don't fancy sitting in my house watching by myself in a ball of tears. I mean, that's definitely not. Yeah. I would go with you to see it anytime.
Yeah, we can laugh.
We can laugh.
So the two of you have had a long relationship before this show. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I was joking before that. She knew me since my freshman year. You know, that was a joke because it was a joke because, well, first of all, I play her daughter in a show, but also, you know, I've been listening to Catherine's voice since I was 16 because my first regional theater production ever was Baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had Catherine's voice in my head for a very long time, because you know when you're that age and you wear those cast albums down to the nub, especially when you know that's rehearsal is in your room by yourself just listening to the whole score. So I played.
You're welcome.
Yes, yeah, so I Peter actually knows me the longest personally, but yeah, that I was joking about that. So no, Catherine and I only met for the first time when I met her was our first day of rehearsal for Barrington.
And I think what is very pathetic is that when she actually said that, I kind of went, shit, did I really go to school with?
Well, yes, indeed.
Right. I kind of went, she's saying it so assuredly. It has to be true.
That's what I meant.
I do recall seeing Leslie, while she was at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. My first memory of her is as Baby Rose in Babes in Arms. I can still see her in the second act coming out with some sort of pastry or some sort of thing she was eating and munching. Do you remember that by any chance? Do you remember that moment, Leslie? You're pardoned if you don't, but anyway.
I don't remember the pastry. I do remember the fat suit because you can see it on the internet. that there is a picture from that production. I don't remember the food, but you know what? It's funny, Peter, because if I can find a bit in any show that funny show that I do that involves food, I will put it in. So I am not surprised that I did that.
So, yes, you just came out for a few seconds, took a few bunches and went right back off stage and the audience gurgled with pleasure. So I remember that happening. And of course, who can forget Leslie's turn as Fanny Bryce at the Paper Mill Playhouse, where she gave the most dynamic performance of the year. And I remember while watching it, my girlfriend was next to me, and when she was singing People, suddenly I grunted, and my girlfriend turned to me and said, what happened? I said, she did something very different there from what Barbara Streisand did, and I think that really paid off very well. So it's a performance I still remember all these years later.
And actually, wasn't there at least one food bit in You Are Woman, I Am Man?
Oh, sure.
Yes. And I don't remember that either. It's weird. I don't remember any of the food bits. I remember I don't remember those food bits at all. But I don't think we really did them. I think I mimed we pretended.
Yeah, yeah. As for Baby, I did not see the original production, but not too
they're
many.
They're all dead. They're all dead.
Not too many years ago.
Oh my God.
That's not true.
I know it's not true.
Not too many years ago. I think it was one of Scott Siegel's shows at Town Hall. Catherine and Liz Calloway and Beth Fowler did I've Got It All. I Want It All, excuse me. And it was absolutely amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's Baby was – I don't know that I thought it was great, but for me it was like just the fact that I created the role. I know how important that is to a lot of people and how often people in this business who are very talented don't get to do that. And I didn't know that back then. So Wow. Yeah.
Well, the Drama Desk appreciated you. They gave you the award.
They did.
Yeah, so.
They did. But I had to pay $60 to go to that dinner.
They don't do that anymore.
Once
I became president of the Drama Desk, that was eliminated.
And you want to compliment, you know, you've been nominated, and you have to pay $60 for your dinner.
Yes, that's very true. I thought that was terrible. When I became president, that was eliminated.
Thank you.
There you go.
Now you have to get another nomination so we can have you come free.
God, now I'm going to go out more parts.
The people who vote still have to pay, so yes.
That's okay. You know,
okay, that's okay. Right.
Now, Catherine, doing research for the Memory Show, did you actually go out and talk to people who were in the early stages?
No, because I think I'm in the early stages.
I see.
Oh, my God.
No. I watched a lot of films. I watched documentaries. I watched it. But you know what? And I have a 91-year-old mother. Not that I know exactly what Alzheimer's is, but my mom will repeat things in loops. And she, you know. So people were a little too appreciative of how well I I sat into it, because I can understand people going off into some kind of place and talking to themselves, and you know. But I did read there was a documentary out, and I can't find it. There was a documentary, so I looked at all of this, but I felt like it was closer to me than that. Well, I don't have Alzheimer's. You know, I don't have Alzheimer's, but I know that I can see my mom's mind slip away, and it's really about just slipping away. And I've seen a lot of people slip away because I'm 64, and people slip away, and their minds, you know, do whatever they do.
I haven't looked for this, but years ago there was a TV movie with Joanne Woodward about a woman with Alzheimer's, and I believe that she actually played an academic as in Still Alice. But
right.
I remember, I think it was the first movie about it, and I think it was so long ago that maybe this is even shortly after they actually named it Alzheimer's. That would be really worth looking up at some time. It was quite something. Richard Kiley played her husband. Peter, do you recall that?
No. I saw one with Len Carreyrou. A different movie entirely. So this is a subject that is of interest to people, of course.
Sure.
As we all get older, and that's inevitable. So I'm not surprised that this is something that got a musical and now has a cast album.
Yeah.
And we all stay older. So the chances of getting Alzheimer's is more prevalent, and it's diagnosed more. It's like, you know, it's the same thing as ADHD. Everything gets now it gets diagnosed, but
yes.
Also as we are getting older, there's a lot more time to diagnose it. So
yeah.
So this the Memory Show won a Jonathan Larson Award, what was that like to see a show that you helped shepherd along from Barrington Transport Group into receiving great accolades?
I mean, it's always great when, you know, you never expect anything from any show. I mean, you always want a show to do well, and you always have high hopes for it. But a show like this, you know, I had no expectations coming in to it at all. I knew it was special as soon as Catherine and I started working on it. I mean, immediately Catherine and I clicked into something that was really special, and that's rare. And it's also, it was such a gift because a two-person show, and I've only done, this would be my second one. They're difficult to write. And to maintain, and to, you know, you're with one other person. So it's good when you really like them. You know, once we did it at Barrington, we knew we had something really special, and I was not surprised that it won that award, because it's also it's so socially relevant, relevant, sorry, and important, because this issue is coming up more and more, and it's really happening to people. And you know, Catherine's young, I mean, but it is happening to people.
Thanks, Leslie.
Catherine, you are, but you are, and you really are. And
I'm not young, you know, for early onset.
And it's happening to people who are younger than you.
Yeah.
And that is a fact. And so to bring awareness to that, and also, you know, the through line of it is forgiveness and love, and to be able to repair relationships even through something that's really difficult and heartbreaking is an incredible, I think that's what I love, that we were able to be a part of a piece of theater that was able to do all of that, you know, because that is definitely rare. And that was a gift. I've never had an experience like I've had with Catherine doing that show.
Sarah Cooper, who's the book writer, lyricist, and Zach Redler, who's a composer. Did you guys have an affiliation with them before the show, or did you meet through the show?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I had no relationship with them. I think I was brought in by Bill Finn.
Oh, Bill Barrington, Finn. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's from the NYU program, and I think I was like foisted on them. Well, at the Barrington, when we did the first reading, do you remember that, Leslie?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
But I remember I had to come in late because I had something else to do. And I came in late on a train and some intern was bringing me in. And I can still see Zach, like, looking out the windows to see who is this person that Bill Finn has, like, put me in touch with. I remember him, like, almost being, you know, fearful of who I would be. And it was just for the reading. It was reading. And then we did a production up there, and then we came into New York, which was great.
Which is so, like, that in itself, right? Is so, we're like, really? We're really doing this? Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did it in like, what was that? 100 seat theater? Maybe?
Yeah. 99.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah.
And it was great. And as soon as I knew I was with Leslie, and we were kind of trusting each other, because you know what? There's not anything threatening. You know, that's where theater like thrives, where actors can get together at a place where there are no threats, and there it seems like a safe, like whatever you do, it's gonna. So you can feel like you can be experimental. That's good.
Yeah.
And Leslie, we adored each other. And then, of course, Vadim.
Yes.
Vadim was our musical director, which, of course, he had a personal preference for Leslie since he married her. But that's okay. He treated me with respect also.
Well, and he was also my boss. You know, he was... He had a hard job because he had to deal with tears after rehearsal because the subject matter was so heavy. You know, I brought in my own my own baggage with my own family. And so, you know, it triggers things. And, you know, he had to deal with the behind the scenes and also be my boss at work, which he was. And I, you know.
And a great kind of, one. Yeah.
Yeah. He's
a great one.
It was hard for him, too, if he was here. It was hard for him to watch the show and play it. He said it was so real to him that it got him choked up a lot, especially towards the end. And by the way, Catherine, have you been able to listen to anything? Have they sent you anything?
They probably have. I am the worst person to listen to anything that I'm on. So I will.
Yeah, no. It's
I should be stronger.
I listened to little pieces.
Anything?
What?
Did they auto-tune?
Well, I have no idea. All I know is that it sounds great. It really, really does.
And you listen to my parts too, right, Leslie?
I listen to pieces of the whole thing, and it's very powerful. You know, it's very powerful, and I couldn't listen to it too much because it gets me, like, I get choked up. I can't, especially the, you know, of course you listen to your stuff. The lullaby, I can't even listen to
it. I don't listen to my stuff, but I will listen to your stuff.
Oh, I listen to your stuff. It's great. And you know my favorite number that you do is So Ira, Here We Are.
Yeah.
I mean.
Had to leave.
But you didn't
get far. Right. Okay.
That was terrifying to do with her every night. She really went there. She really went there. And that's, you know, people, if you didn't get to see the show, you'll get a taste of it from the album. But it was really something to see when she went after me every night. That was... really.
When did you guys record it? When did you make the recording?
When was that? Was it warm out? Was it?
I don't think it was more than 6 months ago, was it?
No, I don't think so.
It was somewhere in my area. I live on the Upper West Side, so somewhere in my area. No.
It was in the village. It was in the East Village.
Yeah.
Mike Reuters.
That was another show.
Oh, I remember. It was in September.
I remember. See, it's a memory show.
September. It was in September. It was about, because I was finishing another show, or I just finished another show. Yeah, so it was the fall.
And so it had been a year or so since you had touched that material. Did it change for you?
For me, I think, I'm trying to think. It was hard to sing some of it, not because parts of it had always been challenging just because of the way the show is. But it was very emotional for me. There are parts that were, cause it just brings things back. It's like that kind of score for me personally, where, you know, it does touch close to a lot of things in my life. So when I come back to it, I feel very vulnerable. So yeah, it was difficult in many ways to come back to it, but it was, you know, it's amazing. It's a gift. So no.
And for me, I don't know. It just, I think I was more aware because I was singing into a microphone that was going to, freeze it for all time. Because if I'm live and on stage and doing whatever I need to do, you know, people forgive you for not hitting exactly, or, you know, being a little, you know, but on a recording, geez. So that kind of screwed me up a little. I figured they would have to deal with that. Hopefully you did.
I'm telling you, you're going to love it.
All right. I'm going to listen to it. I will.
Yeah, you will. Eventually. I understand that. I totally understand that.
Yeah. Because I always think that whatever my performance in that particular piece had to be seen body in the context, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then it was scary to know that it would just be an audio. It was scary because, I don't know. But where you have perfect pitch and, you know, you can. Anyway, next question.
Well, anything coming up that you guys want to tease us with?
I'm sure there's something for Leslie.
I hate when you say that.
I knew I would. Yeah, because it is true. Go.
I mean, I'm always hustling. I just ordered a t-shirt, actually, that said, "Hey, hustle, repeat." Because I saw this on the internet, and I was like, that's totally me. Yeah, I'm doing a bunch of things. I'm working on, I'm doing this new reading of this musical 17 again, which is, they're developing it. It's based on a movie that Adam Shankman's directing. It has some great people in it. And, I'm doing a new show at 54 Below, which I have not announced yet, but it's going to be very exciting.
Breaking news.
I'm sorry. Yeah. That is the news, and it's just not announced yet. So yeah, that's a teaser. This summer, I'm pretty sure that I'm working on this pre-Broadway lab thing. I don't exactly know what to call it, for School of Rock, the musical.
Ah, oh, good.
Okay.
So I got involved with that, which is exciting, with the, you know, Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber, which is very, very interesting and a lot of fun. So, you know, I'm always trying to like write my own stuff and continue doing that and find time for my husband in my life and cleaning somehow. That I was literally just cleaning my kitchen before I came on you guys. So
just in case it was video and audio, right?
Yes. I literally was running upstairs, putting on some mascara. I was like, I hope I look like a normal person. But yeah, so that's kind of what I'm up to, you know, just, I'm just so excited for it to be spring. I can't wait. I just cannot wait.
I think all of us are having that same hope that you are having, because it has been a cold, cold winter. And but Broadway seemed to be making it through it okay insofar as ticket sales. So hopefully it'll be a big, huge spring for everybody. So I want to thank you both for getting up on a Sunday morning and touching base with us about your new CD release. And please come back and let us know what's happening in the future, okay?
Thank you. Oh, also, I just want to I just wanted to say a side thing to Catherine, because, you know, Catherine's a teacher. I don't know if you mentioned that, Catherine, that she's a phenomenal teacher. And
She's right.
And you still teach at AMDA, right?
I teach at AMDA and Queens College. Yeah.
Right. And you also do, I'm doing a plug for her because I'm her press agent. She also does an incredible summer program, which I hope you're doing this summer again.
Yes.
The Triple Threats?
It's our seventh year.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know if anyone's out there listening to that, but she has been very inspiring to me, because I started teaching as well, more out here in New Jersey, but I really enjoy it. And she, you know, that kind of rubbed off on me. And so if anyone's out there, they really should get involved in that, because you guys always have great people involved with it. And it's awesome. And there's so many programs out there, but it's one of the few that I think are really great for people.
Catherine, is that the Broadway Triple Threats?
Yeah. And so, we always have like great guest stars. Like last year we had Jesse Mueller. We had, before that we had,
Darren Baker, Stephanie Block, Nora Brennan.
Stephanie Block, yes.
Danny Burstein, Liz Calloway, Carolee Comello, Greg Edelman, Sean Ellett, Sutton Foster, Bill Finn.
Cream of the crop.
Yeah. Usually get people who are in town because they're in town.
Yeah.
So I'll be in town, Catherine.
Over. I am hoping you're in town.
I'm in town most of the summer. Hopefully, maybe later in the summer, I'd like to do a play. But I am in town. So, yeah.
Great.
Everyone should take it, because it's, you know, I don't know what age range it is, but I'm forgetting how young and
We have two age ranges, 11 to 15 and 16 and up. And the 16 and up has gone to 29. So people who come, and then, So thank you, Leslie.
Of course.
On Broadway Triple Threat NYC.com, it says that we have 133 days left until classes start. So
come on, sign up. Sign up.
We will link to it in our show notes as well, and get folks, a lot of folks listen to us from out of town or come into town for the summer and do some things. So they'll be great.
Oh, I forgot. Sorry. I'm doing a concert at 92nd Street Y in March, Lyrics and Lyricists, The Songs of New York.
Are you going to send me something?
I will send you something. Got to put it in.
All right. I'll be there.
I love Lyrics and Lyricists. It's awesome. I did it last year, and I'm singing some incredible music this year. Mark Waldrop is directing it. Deb Weiner is curating it. I know Billy Stritch is in it. A couple of people that I've never worked with before that are amazing. And so that is like mid-March that happens. So that'll be fun.
Great. All right.
Here we go. Well, I gave you the whole calendar, including Catherine's.
And you have to run out and go teach right now, Leslie.
That's right. I'm going to teach in Short Hills, New Jersey right now to my two little girls, one of which won first place in her vocal competition. I'm very excited.
All right.
All right. Well, you both have a wonderful rest of the Sunday, and thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Bye, guys.
Bye.
I love you, Catherine.
I love you.
My little yellow envelopes in bicycle spokes that appeared and stopped my heart when he laughed. artichokes. Can't remember him wrong.
No, my father wasn't the man you remember. He was very soft-spoken and a good listener, too. A man who took on the family business out of love and respect for his father. A man who was able to put up with you. And he smiled when I did the right thing.
All right, so Michael got a chance to see Larry David's new show, Fish in the Dark. So, Michael, why don't you tell us about that?
It was hilarious. It was fantastic. The audience loved it. And I think anyone who gets a ticket will be very, very happy. My perspective is that I was a great fan of Seinfeld and I watched a lot of it, I would say. But I have not seen a second of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So really, Larry David is, I'm not at all familiar with him until this show as an on-screen presence or an on-stage presence. So I really kind of went in, I think maybe about as cold as anyone can in terms of that. I thought he seemed extremely comfortable on stage, like he'd been doing it all his life. He was fine in terms of projection and timing and relating to the other actors. He did all what I assume is his quote unquote shtick, but he did it all in service of the character, and it was a great success. This is for those who don't know, he wrote and stars in this play, which is basically, it's a very simple premise. As it opens, his father is dying in the hospital and then does in fact die. And then that's really just the catalyst for all of this extremely funny family dysfunction involving quite a few members of his close and extended family. This play has 18 actors in it, many of whom play family members. And I was thinking that it really is amazing. If this was not written by such a known commodity, and if it wasn't anticipated that it would have been such a hint, I kind of think that maybe they would have prevailed on him to cut some of those characters. And to be honest, although everyone in it is great and everyone gets a chance to have at least a couple of really good laugh lines, I did feel like some of the minor characters were not really absolutely necessary. For example, the characters played by Mary Louise Burke and Kenneth Tigar, Rose and Harry Kramer, and also there's a character played by Johnny Orsini. Nothing against these actors. They were all fantastic. They all had their moments to shine. But I did think that they were not, they certainly weren't essential to the comedy or to the plot, and they could have been easily cut. The only negative thing I would say, and this is odd, I had heard this from someone before seeing the play, and I felt exactly the same way. Larry David appears to be much older than his character apparently should be. Jane Houdyshell, who plays his mother, looks like she should be playing his wife. She looks like she's basically the same age. Ben Shankman, who plays his brother, absolutely looks like he should be his son rather than his brother. And I'm not sure why. Someone said that this play was written or at least begun quite some years ago, and I guess maybe that would explain that, why Larry David is still playing the same role that in a sense he's aged out of. But I couldn't understand, as it was happening, I was thinking to myself, is there any reason why he didn't just make a few changes to make himself part of the older generation of the family? Why couldn't he have been the brother of the person who's dying rather than the son of the person who's dying? Yeah. So I would be curious to see either of you guys see it, when and if you see it, if that was an issue for you also. That said, it was so hilarious that I just tried to not let that bother me. And it really was pretty minor in the scheme of things. Although I do still wonder if it occurred to him to make that really slight adjustment, I think, to the family relationships. But what a cast, really, aside from the people I mentioned: Rita Wilson, Richard Topol, Rosie Perez, Molly Ranson, Louis J. Stadlin, Jerry Adler, Jake Cannavale, Bobby's son. In a very late appearing character who is still very, very, very vital to the comedy and to the plot. So it's quite ingenious and really gratifying that it is so good, because I think it probably would have been a hit even if it was bad. From what I understand, that this man has such a following. I've heard incredible things about the pre-sale, and that you cannot get a ticket and it's sold out and blah, 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 blah. So how wonderful that it's really good.
Well, so what do you think about the prognosis for the Tony Awards? Is this something where it might rack up a few?
Well, you know, I don't tend to do that as much as other people do, especially not this early in the season.
Yeah.
I would say it's highly likely. But what are the other plays offhand?
Nevertheless, what we have here is a Big Boffo name, and Tony's on TV love Big Boffo names.
Oh, sure.
Given the fact that the play is good, which we didn't know before, I would say it's a lock for a nomination if the critics agree with you, because good Lord, they want to have that picture, that camera focused on Larry David in the orchestra, the night of the Tonys. They want that to happen. So I think if the reviews are good, there's no question that Larry David's presence and this play will be there on Tony night.
And you don't know what else? It's up against Love Letters.
That's a revival.
No, I mean offhand, I don't focus on
it. Yeah,
So I don't know what offhand are some of the other plays that are
Incident, certainly.
Well, oh, sure, sure.
Let's see.
That has to be a contender.
Well, that's such apple. You know, again,
it's only a play to be a revival. It's only a play going to be a revival?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet it is.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, Disgraced. Disgraced. The Real Thing.
Should be. Real Thing's a revival. But we have
Hand
to.
Hand to God.
Mm-hmm. Hand to God's a good play. You know, yeah. We'll see what Joe DiPietro did with Living on Love. You know, we'll see about that too. But all things. And Wolf Hall. Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll see how significant it is,
Another thing about Fish in the Dark, and I don't know that they will do this, but this would be an example where it would be ideal to excerpt it on the Tonys, for them to do an actual scene, you know, live at the Tonys, because it's so funny that you can just go into it and you don't have to have a lot of setup. And,
uh-huh.
And even though, you know, doing a comedy at Radio City is... No.
Sure.
You know, but still, I think they would go over really well. So I wonder if they might figure out a way to do that.
I think that's I know what you're saying there, and it might work for Fish in the Dark, but it's such a Pandora's box of painfully bad television for the other plays that would be, you know,
good point.
In order to get Fish in the Dark up there, you're going to have to offer it to the other plays, and it could be really very... Yeah.
Oh, that's the problem. I recognize that. But they can't do, you know, they don't feel they can do one and not do the other. But
maybe. I mean, isn't it a case where you pay to get on? So as a result, if Fish in the Dark wants to pay and the other shows don't, well, there you are.
Or on the other hand, you know, I mean, it would work equally well if they just show an excerpt from the, you know, and in that case, the Curious Incident, I think, would come across very well in another sense, just because it's so visually arresting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, aside from the incredible talent of that young man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those would both come across well in excerpts. So we'll see.
All right. So let's move on. Peter got a chance to see Bright Half Life, which is over the Women's Project, but it's playing at City Center. So, Peter, you want to give us a brief synopsis of that?
Yeah, this is one of those plays where think of a movie, Okay. A movie and somebody comes with scissors and cuts up the movie and, into little pieces and then throws it in the air and it becomes confetti. And then somebody puts it back together again without any regard to does this piece belong here or does this piece belong there. So this is about a relationship between two women, a sexual relationship. And the way the playwright has structured it is in this helter-skelter way. So there's a scene here, and then you go back in time, and you go back and forth. And what you realize very quickly is that if this play were done in a linear fashion, it wouldn't be nearly as interesting. Mm-hmm. And so the scene here, the scene there, oh, where are we, all that kind of stuff, is meant to really engage us in a way because the play itself might not. So very well acted, very well produced, nicely staged. But if it was just from stem to stern, a regular play, you wouldn't be as interested as you might. It does bring up a good point, though, about the fact whether or not you should get involved with somebody at work. That is something that a lot of people have done with pleasant results, but plenty of unpleasant results, too. And I don't think I have to elaborate on what happens here, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. I bet you can guess. So, well, that's the stuff of which drama is made. So an okay evening in the theater, but not a must-see one.
All right. So let's wrap up for today. I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There, where each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. Of course, you don't have to listen to us in iTunes. You can listen to us on Stitcher, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device. And get us streamed to you. Broadway World Radio plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m. And contact information for Peter, Michael, and me can be found at BroadwayRadio.com, as well as links to some of the things we've talked about today. So, Peter, do you have an answer for last week's trivia, which was very complex? I can hardly remember it.
Okay, so I had asked a composer of a Broadway musical that ran one night, was known by a name that is included in the name of a play that ran one night. What's the word, the name of the composer, his show, and the play that ran a single performance? Well, the show was Kelly, which 50 years ago opened on February 6th and closed on February 6th. The composer was Mark Charlap, but he's better known as Moose Charlap. And so the play is Moose Murders that I'm talking about, which ran one night as well. So that's that trivia question.
Oh, that's great.
That's funny because Kelly was the first thing that leapt into my mind, but I didn't go any further than that and check who wrote it, and I'm not sure that I would have gotten the Moose thing anyway.
Let me point out that there is a tremendous article that was written about Kelly in the Saturday Evening Post a few weeks after the show closed that was like 12, maybe 14 pages. I mean that. Plenty of pictures. And while you don't get the pictures in Steve Susskind's book, Second Act Trouble, the article is there, and it is compelling reading. It also won an ASBE Award, the American Society of Magazine Editors, back in 1966 for one of the best articles of the year. So it really is worth reading about the troubles, tribulations that went on in producing the musical Kelly, and what a disaster. It was the biggest disaster of its time. It lost $650,000. Today, of course, if you lose $650,000 on a musical, you can actually claim you had a hit because you paid almost everything back. But but back then, this was quite the loss. Okay, so what do these people have in common? These Tony winners: Robert Preston, Walter Matthau, Gwen Verdon, Zira Mostel, Judy Holliday, Ethel Merman, Phil Silvers, Robert Morse, B. Arthur, Ray Bolger, Kevin Kline, Ray Walston, and Carol Haney.
All right, so if you can figure out the correlation between that list of folks, let us know. All our contact information, of course, is at BroadwayRadio.com. So on behalf of Michael Portantier and Peter Felicia, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right.
I have questions. There are things I want to know. I have questions. Things I should have asked long ago. But that's how the two of us are. I don't know why we wait. I I'd like to get to know her, but I guess that it's too late. To get it somehow, it's time for me to forget and live with her here in the now. Or at least I'll try.